God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the decisions. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
I am Donna.
Hi, Donna. Welcome. Hi, Tina. Welcome. Glad you're here. Anyone else? Great. Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and will allow anyone to listen, will allow all to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This meeting, we're on steps 8 and 9. Please welcome our panel this evening. I will read the first page, reading on page 76, and the panel will share for a few minutes each on that reading. Page 76, now we need more action, without which we find faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in our past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Bobby?
Yeah, my name's Bobby. I'm an alcoholic.
And Bobby.
So I used to live here. I'm living out in Gates, North Carolina now. My home group is the Sunbury Group. Meets on Tuesday nights. And my old group was Joys of Recovery out in Chesapeake. And we got to study this here big book quite a bit. And one of the things I wanted to share about this, and a couple of little things I underlined, was that we have a list, because we did step 4 and 5, that we have a list. And that's where it came from, right? And the other thing I put was, you know, when we took inventory, our efforts to live on self-will and run the show ourselves, which was our alcoholic life, right? I do what I want, the way I want, when I want. And it always makes a mess. And that was the whole point of everything. So the thing that really gets me is, if we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. So that's prayer, right? So I'm adding the word prayer in that. We ask, if we haven't the will, if we haven't the strength, if we don't have the spiritual power to do this, to do these amends, because, you know, some people have a tough time with the fifth step. I only had a problem with one thing in the fifth step, and that's the one I didn't want to write down on paper because I didn't want anybody ever to see it. But the rest of the fifth step, I was okay with, especially the stuff where everybody hurt me. That was totally okay with, you know? So I had no problem with that. But making amends to people, to go to them, and I don't know if y'all remember Fonzie, but, you know, from the old whatever, the Happy Days show, he couldn't get the word sorry out. And for me, it was that same kind of deal. I didn't like it. I never liked to admit I made a mistake, much less my whole living of life had been a mistake. And when I came back to AA in October 18th, 2011, and I had been in AA before, my first time in AA, I had only hurt myself and my direct family because I was a single guy, right? At 22, I drank myself into AA. But when I came back in, I was 46 and I had a wife and two kids and a job and a house and blah, blah, everything, right? So, and a lot more people to make amends to. There was a lot of people on this stuff. And the one thing that I made a little note, I just wanted to share with you, and this isn't straight out of the big book. And most, I am a big book person, as anybody knows me knows. But this is one that my sponsor, Tim Mahoney, added from his sponsor out West. And it worked. And it's just a cool little thing. What he had us do, and actually wrote it on the back of page 164, 165, was we used index cards for the people. And he had these directions that had been passed down for generations of sponsors of exactly what to do with this card. You put the name on the card. You put the wrong, the harm, you put it. And what it did is it acted like a little script so that when you go to talk to somebody, you know exactly what to say. So you're not winging it. Because if I go to somebody, I might remember to pray before I go. But as soon as I start talking about the harm that I know I've caused in their life, there's a part of my brain that's going to get defensive and twist it and jack it all up. Maybe even try to point out how they caused me to be that way. Maybe, you know, because I know I'm full of BS left to my own devices. So the index card acts like a little script. And the other thing we did is you put a plus on it if you think you can do it. Plus, plus, if it's really easy, and a minus if you don't want to do it, and a minus, minus if hell no, I'm never going to do this. And you put it to the back of the deck and you keep them. Right in that big book. And for me, the cool thing is when you got one done, there you go. And it feels good. It's goal setting and achievement too. I mean, you can call it that. So I just wanted to share that. We're going to talk a lot more. But that's just one cool little trick that was handed down from sponsors. And it keeps you on script. It helps me say the harms that I have caused and then what can I do to make this right? Even if I'm scared of what that answer might be. Scott, you bet.
Thank you. Scott, alcoholic.
Hey, Scott.
The eighth and ninth steps were right up there with the fourth and fifth in my least favorite steps. When I was looking at them on the wall before I ever started to actually try and do any of them on my own, you know, I was okay with the idea of maybe getting in touch with this power greater than me. But the idea of the fearless and searching moral inventory or that didn't sound attractive at all. Telling it to another human being sounded even less attractive. But there, I didn't realize, you know, I tended to lump everything together. And one of the beautiful things is that I can separate these. The steps are manageable if I do them one at a time. You know, four and five, I have to do the inventory, but I don't have to tell it to somebody until the fifth. And in the same way, eight and nine, I'm looking at that going, oh, I don't want to talk to these people. Eight doesn't say I have to. Nine does. But if I approach the steps one by one, then I can make it a much more manageable process. But then I start to read it. You know, there's lots of things that I don't like. Like we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. I don't like that at all. I mean, self-appraisal, I'm not real fond of, but drastic sounds like it's kind of taking it overboard. And then the more I read, and there, throughout these readings we have here tonight, there's lots of words there that sound like drastic, that sound very extreme to me. The very last thing that we read in this first paragraph, remember, it was agreed at the beginning, we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Like, any? How about, okay, I'll go to some. Maybe this one, maybe that one, not that. But the more I qualify, then the more I limit my recovery, which is not something I wanted to consider when I first started getting sober. You kind of, Bobby shared some of what I was going to share, so I won't go over it word for word, but I will say, you know, when it says, now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. Okay. How? Okay. I get the direction, go out to our fellows, but what exactly am I supposed to do? And I had an idea of what an amends looked like. And I'm very thankful that I didn't do many of them until I'd actually talked to a sponsor about it, because my idea of what it looked like and the way I was supposed to do it were entirely different. Having a sponsor at any step along this path is valuable, advisable, but it was most important to me, I think, here. And for like Bobby mentioned, the note card idea, my sponsor told me, you will not wing this. Mm-hmm. You're not going to show up on somebody's doorstep and go off on this monologue You're not going to continually tell them how sorry you are. They know that. You're not going to blame it all on alcohol. Well, I was really drunk. That doesn't have to be the focus of it. You're going to tell them what you did. And you're going to, most importantly, when you're done, you're going to ask them what you can do to make it right.
Cool.
And then once again, what did we read? Am I willing to go to any lengths? That's some tough stuff. I wasn't willing to do all that right away. But the beauty of having it written down in front of me is that, no, I didn't go off script. I was able to stick to the point rather than going on and on. Because on my own, I'll go off and, well, yeah, you know, this happened when I was 5. You know, I wouldn't have really been drinking unless this has happened when I was 15. Like, they don't need to know that. It needs to be on target, on task. And so the note card thing was very helpful to me. Again, that's probably the most helpful step for me to have a sponsor with, to give me very specific directions about how to do this, and to remember that the point is not to just to apologize, but to make it right. And additionally, that I don't get to decide how I make it right, because I would say, I'll fix it this way, I'll fix it that way. That's not my choice. It's the choice of the person that I'm going to make amends to. So these things seem obvious in retrospect, but I needed reminders, and I needed clarification before I walked in and made a fool of myself. Thanks.
Thank you both. Our next reading is also on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. Some people we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
Mm-hmm. So our real purpose in life is to fit ourselves, to get changed. Transformation, you could use that word too. To be of maximum service to God and other people about us. And I first heard that my first time in AA from a sponsor, Randy, at the time, and Jack Boland, his sponsor. And they made a big deal about this because I didn't have a purpose in life before I got to AA. My purpose was to drink, and my purpose was to stay as numb as possible and deal with life that way. That's really all I had. And I knew, because I was raised Catholic, so I knew it wasn't right to kill yourself. So I couldn't commit suicide, but I didn't even realize I was committing suicide a 12-pack at a time. It was just a slower, you know, evolution. So when I got to AA, and by the time you get into this step, in my experience, there were some changes that were occurring. And to have a new purpose in life, that the big book talks a lot about this new way of living. That's one of the, it's one of the, you know, it's the, I want to say the gift, I guess it's the outcome of doing these 12 steps, is that we get this new way of living, and we get to have a choice to have a new way of living. Because when I'm drinking, I don't get to choose how I'm going to live. I just go around reacting to everything. Life hurts. Hey, let's get a beer. Like, you know, like, hey, this is great. Let's do some shots. That's the way life is. Drink. And I don't get the choice. I don't get a choice. I'm not free to do what I want to do because the booze is telling me what I'm going to do. Like, I wouldn't be going out on Monday night after a Super Bowl. Are you kidding? I'd be suffering at work the whole week, day, all day long. And I'm telling myself that I cannot go out to the 7-Eleven and drink beers at lunchtime, because my rule was if I ever did that, I had to go straight to rehab because that was unacceptable. But I would suffer, and the people around me might suffer a little bit too at work, right? With this hangover from Super Bowl, Sunday, which was partying all the night before, probably started about Thursday night, knowing me, you know, that's the way it would be. And then that hangover. So Monday night, I didn't have a choice what I was going to do. I only had one decision. Was it going to be beer or was it going to be a thing of Kessler's whiskey? Or maybe it was going to be some fun. That was my choice. So my primary purpose was to deal with the hangovers that were inevitable when I was drinking. So I just had to say that. So now we have a new purpose in life, to fit ourselves and be a master service to God. So it doesn't say we have a real purpose in life is just to not drink. Because folks, that ain't the deal. That's not what we're here to talk about tonight. Not drinking is a basic requirement, yes. But the rest of this is how do we get changed in these 12 steps? There's little bits that we have to do, but then we have to have through these 12 steps that God changes us in ways that I can't change myself either. I know I tried. There's certain parts of me that all I can do is to say, okay, God, I tried. Would you please? I can admit this character defect over here, but I need you to help me practice the opposite of that. I know I'm scared and afraid. I need you to please help me trust you and trust life. And I'm hating on something again, or I'm resentful. Please help me be loving and accepting. And I got to ask for strength to do it because I can't do it on my own. Another little thing I want to add here, because this is the Joe and Charlie thing that I learned from listening to these guys. We make a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. So what's that beneficial message that they imply? Because they don't, it's not like a textbook like we're used to seeing the Navy training manual. Blah, blah, blah. It's not like that. So what's the beneficial message? It's that these 12 steps are transformational and healing. If we work these 12 steps, like Scott was saying, you know, with the sponsor and doing these, and we keep doing them, right? You don't just do them one time, get done, but keep doing them. The beneficial message is there'll be a relationship with God. And it will happen because it can't not happen. Because to do this stuff, it does take that spiritual power to do it. Please, Scott.
Thanks. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. Just that phrase of first approach kind of reminded me of an early amends I made long before I had the idea to get a sponsor or to think about doing it the right way. In the second of my DUI trilogy, I had decided that the house, like a few doors down from where I live, the lady who lived there drove a school bus. And for some odd reason, I thought it'd be kind of fun to hop up in the school bus at 2 a.m. because I was drunk. And I'm just sitting behind the wheel. I'm not planning on taking it anywhere, but I'm, you know, hitting the brakes and turning the lights on and doing all kinds of crap. Not thinking that, you know, this is really kind of going to draw some attention to myself at 2 a.m. in the quiet suburban neighborhood. And sure enough, it did. But so later on, a day or two later, after the hangover worn off and I realized how stupid I felt, I thought, I gotta say something to, you know, I can't just let this go. I'm their neighbor. Why the hell was I doing this? So I walk up to the house and I ring the doorbell and the husband shows up, not the wife. She was the one who drove the bus, but the husband showed up. He's got a beer in his hand and I'm going up, man, I'm sorry. I mean, I was drinking, I was drunk, I was stupid. I don't know why I did that. And he takes a sip on his beer and he said, "No, man, I got you. I think I'm an alcoholic too, you know, because I think I told him I was an alcoholic." And I did all the stuff that was wrong for how to make an amends. I didn't ask at all about how to make it right. I just wanted to unload because I felt, how can I face this guy again? I'm an idiot. And but, you know, then little did I know, years later, I come in here and read, "But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries." I couldn't talk spiritual discoveries at that point because I hadn't made it. But I did have a little bit of goodwill, which I choose today to believe that was God-given. I don't take credit for that today. And so the God of my understanding is a graceful and funny God who lets me learn some lessons the hard way. And I mention that just because, you know, I sit here years later and I read that. I think even when I did it the wrong way, things still kind of turned out. So it helps me today to realize that I've been taken care of in so many facets of my life, even when I didn't deserve to be, that it gives me more of a foundation to go forward and to do the right thing today. It was Bobby mentioned, I mean, the core of this, I think, right there in the middle of the reading, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. I mean, that's it's in the section on step 8 and step 9, but I think that's about all of life in general. You know, hey, I quit drinking, grand. So what, do I deserve a cookie for that? I mean, lots of people go through their life and don't do that. So the purpose of this is not just to stay sober, but to engage in life in a meaningful way with people, the people around me, which I do by cleaning my side of the street. So thanks.
Thank you both. All right. Our next reading is on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take up the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill will and expressing our regret.
This is cool. Scott, I didn't think about this. So I do want to share a couple of things that are my personal experience with these steps. When I came back to AA in 2011, it was because of a motorcycle accident. And it was at night, and I was riding bike on a ramp, and I got to the top of the ramp, had my wife on the back, and there was a car right in front of me. And all I remember is downshifting a few times, trying to slow it down. But I still bumped his bumper. And when you take a motorcycle and bump a bumper, it throws the bike down. So it threw us off of there, created a big mess, and cops had to show up, and blah, 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 right? So out of the accident report, and I got a lot of paperwork out of this, including, you know, the DUI, of course, right? Because they took my blood and they didn't ask me. And then would you talk about resentment about that? So Norfolk General Hospital was on my resentment list, right? Because I was able to laugh about it by the time I got to it. But no, I was really pissed about them taking my blood without my permission and then finding it was .20, you know? But the guy, I had the accident report. So I had the guy's name, had his address, where he lived, had multiple phone numbers. So this guy in Richmond, this, I won't even say, but this dumb ass that in my head, and I'm a pretty peaceful dude, pretty normal, but I really had hateful feelings and really thought about going to Richmond and messing this guy's property up and stuff like that. I would play these movies in my head, but that's what resentment's about, right? Play a movie in my head that I was the director in playing this movie out. And the wild thing was, when I finally got to court for the DUI, the one thing I wanted to ask this guy was, what the hell were you doing on that ramp? Why weren't you moving? And I had already surmised that because it's a split in the road, he probably didn't know where he was going. But I finally, we were at the court thing, and there was a whole lot of praying. I was 8 months sober by the time it finally got to court, Chesapeake General Court. And I was going to this guy to just ask him, what happened that night? But what came out of my mouth was, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're having to be here today because I'm a drunk. This was my fault. This all had to do with alcohol, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really sorry that you're having to take time out of work to be here at court today because of me. I caused this. And that's all. And the guy was like, okay. And he was kind of shocked. I remember that. He didn't really talk to me, just kind of shocked. Okay, dude. You know, okay. But I've shared that before because that was just, that wasn't me. What came out of my mouth wasn't me. It wasn't what I had planned. But that's the power of these 12 steps. And to me, I wrote miracle by this because that was a miracle. That went from, I wanted to hunt this guy down and kick his ass to, I'm sorry that I affected your life. Wow. That's the power of the 12 steps. I'll turn that over.
Thanks. I'm just reading through this and thinking I got nothing here. There wasn't anybody I really hated, although there are a whole lot of situations that I hated. Although hearing that story, you know, it's awesome. I recognized in the very first meeting I ever came into that I was hearing my story, whether I cared to admit it or not. And to hear that reminded me also of also in the evening of the second night of my DUI trilogy, as I'm driving drunk through the neighborhood because I just got nothing else to do. I decided there's a car that for some reason I felt I needed to get inside. And so I,
that was not your own.
It was not my own. No. And so I did. And, it turned out to be the car of the mother of one of my sister's friends. That was awkward. And she felt the need to press charges, or maybe she didn't argue with the cop anyway, who said, "You're going to get a tampering with a motor vehicle charge." So that's a little unnecessary, I think. I mean, I didn't take anything. The car was unlocked. I mean, come on. And so I guess, you know, in retrospect, it's a little easier to call that a resentment, although I wouldn't have labeled it that way at the time. And so when I first thought about all this, you know, I went back, I had to go apologize to the dude whose wife's school bus broke into. That was kind of rude. But I didn't think I really needed to go back and say anything to this lady, this other person's car that I'd gotten into, because I thought she already knows. She showed up in court, damn it. I mean, to prove, just to make sure I got the conviction, she's got the satisfaction from that. She doesn't need me to, and, you know, going on and on in my head. And it was longer than I cared to admit before I realized that she probably had to take the day off from work to go to court. She hadn't been planning on losing a day from work to go to court for this snotty little kid who broke into her car. And it probably, so the more I thought about it, the more that I thought, I kind of rearranged her world a little bit, not in a long-term devastating way, but in a noticeable way. I had an impact on her life that I didn't need to have. And it took me some time into sobriety to realize I probably should go back and make that right. And that turned out to be one of my better amends. Actually, we had a great conversation, no hard feelings, everything was good. But it's funny that Bobby mentioned that, because I it's one of those things where I didn't realize until much later, I do need to make an amends on that. I had rationalized that away in my head. But of course, talking to a sponsor, he was also pretty certain that I need to make amends about that too. So once again, there's always value in sharing the thoughts that are in my head, because they could be a lot screwier than I think they are, even at long-term sobriety. So thanks.
Thank you. Our next reading is on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years, standings melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise that we are doing what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter. However, if someone does throw us out of his office, we have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam.
So we've made our demonstration. We have taken action. That's the main point of this step, is that we can't sit here and be spiritual and wish love on the whole world and never do something. We have to take the action. And part of that action, which we're not, it's not right here, is really to bust our egos, plain and simple. It's there's some parts of my ego that just need busted. And by doing these amends, that my ego's dying a little bit every time, you know. Especially when I keep it to my side of the street. So that is a big deal. We're there to sweep up our side of the street. We don't talk about what they did to cause anything or lie. It just doesn't matter. And it is hard with somebody who you think there's pretty good cause for the reason we still have this resentment against them. The sample I wrote down here was my ex-wife, but her parents, my in-laws. And, it was one of the cards that got a minus on it and got stuck to the back of the pack. And I was a couple years into sobriety and still carrying this one around with me. And I had tried a couple of times. I had prayed, and I was going to pray, and I prayed, and I'm going to call him up, and I'm going to do this amends. And I called the house, and nobody answered. And I'm like, oh, good. I was willing. Let's tear that up. And Tim was like, no, dude, that just means you got to try again. And another part of these cards is you can put the address on there so you can send them an amends letter, right? And you've heard, everybody's heard this about for people who have passed on, sometimes it is good to write a letter and find somebody to read it to and go have a good cry over, whatever. There's times that that's very appropriate too. But I was ready to avoid it. He's like, no, no. Okay. So when I finally did get him on the phone one time, the thing that I had to stick with was my part of it, that so I do remember what I had said is, well, I know that I hurt you because I endangered your daughter who was on the back of the motorcycle that night. I could have made your two beautiful little grandkids orphans. And I'm sorry for the times that you were up here and that we all didn't get along. I kind of left it, you know, brief like that. I do remember, you know, cause I didn't want to get into just sweeping my side of the street, you know? And I could tell you funny ones, there was a hurricane coming and I almost packed their car for them. They were going to stay with us and there's a hurricane coming. And I'm like, no, 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 I've had enough. You guys got to go back to Florida. You're going the right way. The hurricane's coming this way. But I was so scared to make this amends because one of the things I was afraid of was they were going to say, oh, great. Now that we're cool again, we'll be up next week and we'll bring our stupid little poodle that loves to pee in your house. See, it did not like that poodle either, by the way. So I was really afraid that this amends could lead to that. So what I had to pray about was that whatever the outcome was, it was going to be okay. You know, because I felt like I was the block between them and my kids and they're the grandparents. And I don't want to be the block. So one of the things I had written is, please don't be afraid to call the house. If I answer the phone, I will gladly put you on the phone with the girls. I knew that was one thing I wanted to say. But what came out of this conversation was they weren't mad at me at all. They were pissed at their daughter about some other things that had nothing to do with my drinking or when I told them to go back to Florida. So that was amazing. But it is kind of like here, though, it takes a spiritual way of doing this and you get these outcomes that you wouldn't ever think of. So I just wanted to share that when it's hard and you got that minus or minus minus on the card, it goes back in the pack. You get some good experience doing these amends first, and it helps to be able to go do the hard ones. I just want to share.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Never trying to tell him what he should do. Man, I love telling people what they should do. It's a whole lot easier telling you how to fix a problem than it is to try and fix my own. So that was not something which used to be intuitive to me. But when I read this, you know, what we just read, it makes me, my mind skips ahead, you know, because it doesn't stay on anything for more than 5 or 10 seconds, skips ahead to the 11th step prayer. The idea that, when it writes here, we never try to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own, you know, it's on me. What about me? And the 11th step prayer coming in for me anyway, is to understand more than to be understood. Because I want to tell you why you were wrong and why I'm convinced that you were wrong. I don't want to consider maybe how you looked at it or how it may differ from the way I looked at it, to serve more than to be served. You know, I was always upset when I drank because people didn't help me out enough. They didn't reach out to me enough. And if they had, maybe I wouldn't have been drinking as much. But so that my mind just kind of flashes ahead to that at this point, because when it writes about, you know, when we do this process, we have to stick to our own. Why did I do what I did? And without any other reason for anybody else in the situation. And then when it says toward the beginning, simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. And again, these extremist kind of words come up, like utmost. That's a lot. I mean, I could deal with, you know, until I've done a little bit to straighten out the past, or until I've done some stuff to straighten out the past. But, you know, utmost, that's a high bar. But I do believe, I haven't been drunk since 1997. And I believe today the reason primarily is that God of my understanding has removed the compulsion to drink. And I've been able to maintain that daily, that spiritual condition on a daily basis. But when it says here, we will never get over our drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past, that is a huge part of whatever peace that I feel today in my daily living, going to work, coming to meetings, going to the grocery store, driving down the street, is because I don't have the things hanging over my head that I once had hanging over my head that I just didn't want to deal with, or I was afraid of straightening out. You know, every morning when I wake up, the slate is clean. And if it's not, I know how to clear it through steps 10, 11, and 12, you know, the daily inventory, the spot check inventory, whatever you call it. So that's pretty powerful to me. I will never get over drinking. There again, that's pretty extreme too. It doesn't say I'm unlikely to. It's, no, I'm not going to. I'm just not going to get past this compulsion to drink until I have addressed my past and made peace with the people in it. Thanks.
Thanks. Page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not doubt our creditors. Telling them what we were trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have got to go. For we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them.
So they're talking about creditors. And I only had one big one. I'll tell one real quick. It was to the treatment center that I first went to recovery in back in 1989 when I was first in the program. And I owed them some money and I was paying back a little bit of time, but then I had a kid and I got busy with life and wasn't paying them anymore. So one of the amends that I made along with my sponsor and told him about it was I picked a few local charities because they definitely didn't need my money back and they wouldn't know it had been written off long ago. And so I started contributing to a couple of local ones. And it's a union mission because near to my heart is that if I had kept drinking, I'd have ended up there, if not under a bridge somewhere. So the neat thing about making this financial amends a little bit at a time over a few years was that it got me in the habit of being a giver. To being a giver to a good cause too, you know, and I thank AA for that, because again, that's not me, y'all. That's these 12 steps changing me in a different way. But the one I want to share about this one, that in my big book, the word creditors is scratched through. Our drinking, we must lose fear. This is the really important sense. We must. There's that so serious thing, must. There's no must in big book, y'all. Don't believe that crap. We must lose our fear of fill in the blank. Fill in the blank on that word. We must lose our fear of whatever that thing is that keeps us awake at night, or like Scott was saying, keeps us afraid of what's going on. When I was a young man, first time in the program, I was afraid of every knock on the door. I was afraid if someone was going to show up and say, here's your little kid, you owe me some money. Child said, honestly, I was really afraid of that. And it's just the kind of fears that my brain can make up more fears than there really are in life. So I must lose my fear of fill in the blank, whatever it is, no matter how far I have to go, for I'm liable to drink if I'm afraid to face them. If I'm afraid to face them. So one of the last card that I had. And look, I'm going to share this. Y'all don't, nobody has to share like this. But when I was 19, I got herpes. I was in a band and I'm rocking and in a row, right? Doing everything I wanted to do. And I got herpes out of the blue. And my solution to that was to drink until the end. I figured I was going to die a lonely old man under a bridge somewhere, and I was going to drink. That's how I first drank my way into AA at 22. Now, part of that, when I finally got back into AA and had this card with Ashley's name on it, I was afraid. I was afraid. She was the woman that I ran away from Mississippi on because I didn't know if I might've gave it to her, because that was my biggest fear. It's like, okay, somebody gave it to me. So I was a victim. I was okay with being a victim because you could drink over being a victim, but I was afraid I might've gave it to her. And I ran away from Mississippi. And so I found her on Facebook, friend of a friend down in Mississippi still, and got a hold of her and said, hey, you know, I've been sober for a little bit. Do you think I could catch up with you? Would it be okay if I got your phone number? And sure, came back right away. And so I didn't know if I had harmed her. So what I was able to tell her was, I know that I ran away from Mississippi when we were together, and I'm sorry that I did that. And did I harm you in any way? Right? Did I harm you? And I figured that would give her a chance to unload on me if it was. And she's like, no, it hurt my feelings that you just up and left and you didn't tell me you were leaving and you just took off and kind of broke my heart a little bit, but I got over it. And I was like, good. And that one, that was somewhere in year number three is what I remember of being sober, because it took me that long to get the spiritual strength from God to be able to do this, to what it says, we got to be willing to face whatever the outcome is. So my outcome was afraid of lawyers and child support payments and all that other stuff, you know, but it didn't happen. And what a feeling when I was able to tell my sponsor, Tim, I got it. She's okay. We're okay. And honestly, the wild thing is she's a nurse. We're just one of the many friends I've kept in touch with over the years, you know, married, kids, everything's fine. To take that last card and go, shoo, shoo, I am done with this. Now, that was of the old stuff. And I've had to do this, as Scott mentioned, attention stuff. At work, there's been people that just piss me off when they don't recognize how important a guy I am. Like they would say, you know, I'm a big deal sometimes in my own mind. And so I've had to make amends, and I've had to pray, which is part of the other thing I want to add in here, is when I can't get over that resentment, and it does bother me at night. And I guess the longer you stay sober, the tolerance for that resentment feeling in the stomach, well, it goes way down. It really bothers me. So I have to actively pray. And the way I was taught was the Emmett Fox way of praying for them to have all good stuff, have a good life, be loved, get whatever you need in your life. God, please take care of them. And that spiritual tool in the toolkit of praying for them to have abundance and prosperity, it works. It works because it gets me free. Sometimes it takes a long time. Like the guy that built my house had so many problems. I had to drag this builder over the finish line myself as a project manager. There you go. See, that's my ego. I'm a project manager. I could have built that house myself, you know? But I had to drag him over, and boy, I had to pray for him. And every time there's still some stuff pops up out of the blue about what a jerk this guy is. I pray for him, his family, and everything. But that's because I learned it in the 12 steps. So, here goes.
Thanks. I don't have a whole lot of creditor stories. A former employer would have been if they had known that I borrowed a large sum of money against their knowledge, but I'll save that for the next reading. It was not until probably 22, 23 years into sobriety where a sheriff finally came and banged on my door at 7 a.m. I thought, what the hell is this? And thankfully, having done the 8th and 9th step, and I knew there was no law enforcement coming after me or no nothing going on. And it turns out it was for jury duty. Like what the hell? I mean, in Norfolk, there are so few people who respond to jury duty summons. They started delivering them in person. 7 a.m, the sheriff's banging on my door. Hey, here's your jury. Wow. So, but I was able to answer the door out of curiosity rather than run in fear. I was like, they're out to get me. You know, that's what I always kind of imagined happening, and it didn't. But I thought of kind of the same thing Bobby had mentioned too. We must lose our fear of creditors. Well, I didn't have creditors in particular, but I had a whole lot of other things I was afraid of. And then at the end, it says, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. So that's pretty powerful. And it ties back to what I said or what I read from the last part, that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. I have not figured out a way to live life without fear. Some people may have. I haven't. But I have realized that the farther I let that fear go, the more dangerous territory I'm getting into. And thankfully, I've developed a network of people that I can share these fears with, so that I can keep them in check in a way that I've not worried. I've not been afraid of having to go out and drink again. If I ever did again, it would be purely my choice to do so. And today I choose not to, because I found a way to maintain a community and a network to show me that my irrational fears really are irrational, and that my rational fears, because there are some of those, will dissipate if I act on them. And that was news to me, because I was okay. I wanted to get rid of my fears. I didn't really want to take any action there to make that happen. I was hoping maybe this Santa Claus God would come in and just wipe them away, which didn't happen. So yeah, that's kind of what I thought about for this reading. Thanks.
You, page 79. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or even face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
So what I wrote was, we have decided to go to any lengths, reminding ourselves. And my home group, we just had a whole meeting on this the other night, reminding ourselves that we decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual expression. I'm going to twist that again. I'm going to say, I must remember that I decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. And I've had the pleasure of sponsoring guys and reminding them that they too have decided that, you know, you're going to go to any lengths. Because through all these steps, sometimes we get stuck, you know, and sometimes we need push. Sometimes we need to pull. Sometimes we need your arm around the shoulder and say, come on, let's do this. You know, let's keep going. Because what we can't see is the planting of the seeds sometimes that we can't see it's growing, and we can't see that automatically, you know, when we do some of these events, they're really tough at times. And facing these fears. And what I didn't point out on the last one that I had reminded myself is that when I shared with you those with the in-laws, with Ashley, those were facing the deepest fears of mine. And I could not have done that without God, plain and simple, that those experiences build that relationship, because when I know the thing is too hard for me to do on my own, that's when I need God. So it gets back to sponsoring a guy who's a sponsor of the summer, and he drifted away and he's back. And so I was telling him, and I know some of y'all know what I mean. The friendships that you mentioned, you said community, it's the friendships that we have in AA are such a blessing, so important. That when you're coming back and you're full of shame and guilt and remorse, and the wife is threatening to kick you out, and you know that you haven't been a good dad or a good employee, that, I mean, I know all that stuff from the past, and these with the 12 steps heal this, that there's, it can be better. Not only can it be better than it is when you first come in, and you got the weight of the world on your shoulders, but man, it's amazing how you can get free. You can get free of that, always being afraid and these resentments. And I'm remembering, because they use that word resentments a lot in here. And I used to play those movies all the time. And it's so wild that nowadays when I have a little bit of something, it just kind of irks me. But we know what to do. Where have I been resentful, dishonest, afraid, self-centered again? Because, you know, sometimes it just comes back up in different ways. One of the things that I had to do was with my own kids, because I was such a self-centered a-hole when I was drinking through my kids' early childhood, to get to be a sober dad, hashtag sober dad, you know. And boy, was I proud of that first when that stuff happened, man. I was taking my kids out to like Starbucks, taking these pictures, hashtag sober dad, doing sober things with my kids. Somebody pat me on the back, like Scott was saying. Yeah, it's just a phase, you know. Because now I literally, when they need something, my first thought is yes. And yes, and then let me figure out how to do it, instead of no. Like, that's money in my own pocket. Like, my kiddo's in college, and my youngest one, she's coming back. So just the other day, cost me $200 to fly her, got to fly her back to Pittsburgh when she's coming in for spring break. But my sponsor, Tim, would have said, I get to, you know, I get to be part of my kiddo's life and help out with this stuff, because I'm sober. I have the money. And that's a credit thing. But the going any length to find a spiritual experience requires action, is the one little note that I have here. And we've been talking about it a lot. It requires actions that most of the time are beyond my capability. It's reaction. It's these required actions to even go do this stuff. Sometimes it's to get out of bed, to come to a meeting. Sometimes it's to go make the coffee when you just really don't want to. Or in some cases, deal with some of the personality stuff that happens in life that we just really don't want to. And we jokingly call it adulting now. And I think that's a good word for it. Sometimes adulting is tough, but it's tougher when I'm doing it on my own versus when I can get into the spiritual stuff and ask God to help me be the spiritual adult. Now that's a different kind of way of looking at it too, right? That I'm looking for spiritual sanity, not the world's sanity. I need spiritual sanity. And I want emotional sobriety. I don't want just to be just sober from alcohol. I want emotional sobriety. So I'm not going around reacting and being afraid of everything, because that was the big deal for me here. So going to any length to find a spiritual experience, and that's doing these 12 steps. And again, here's a heavy duty word in that last sentence. We must not shrink at anything. Must not. So there's the must again. And the only way I found to do the tough stuff is I can't do that on my own. I need God's power to help get me through it. And with that, I'll pass over to Scott.
Thanks. Said that with the last reading, I didn't have any creditor issues, but my former employer would have been had they known that, when I graduated from college, the first job that I got after college required a driver's license, which I had drank away during my time at college. And so I was left with a degree that wasn't doing me a whole lot of good. And I took a retail job that I was convinced was well beneath me. I didn't have much of a concept at that point in my early 20s, the dignity of work, or that I was lucky to have a job at all since I showed up drunk periodically. So I was kind of pissed. I didn't hate anybody there, but I really didn't like the job. So after some point, I just started taking 20s from the till here and there and more often, because I thought, they're not paying me what I really deserve. And I knew this was wrong. It wasn't that I approved this in any way. It was straight up wrong. But in mind, I was drunk. I was 20 something. It was okay. It was okay enough for me to do that. Now, again, as I mentioned earlier, God, if my understanding has a sense of humor, and all that the money that I took, I wound up spending in legal fees for the third DUI that I got after I had been doing this. So it didn't really, it didn't, theft doesn't pay, kids, don't do it. But so now again, after I quit drinking a long time before I came into AA. So by the time I had gotten into AA and gotten up to step 8 and step 9, this company had been bought out by another company, which had been bought out by another company, which had been bought out by another company and gone bankrupt. I mean, there was no, so I'm kind of thinking, now I knew I had to pay the money back. I knew that, but I thought, what exactly do I do? And it says here, it was something about seeking direction. What was it? And so again, that was where a sponsor was most valuable. Is we ask, having decided that to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing. Now I'm all about prayer. I love to sit on my ass and pray. I could do that all day long. But prayer, to be effective, I found I need to tie that into life here on earth at some point. And so I couldn't just pray, oh, God, lead me to. I mean, that's fine. I don't mean to mock that entirely because it's valuable. But I needed to take the next step and put that into action. So I had to ask my sponsor, right? So what do I do with this? I mean, I know I got to pay the money back. But and so he just said, yeah, you do. But pick a charity, pick a concern. It's been years ago. The people you took it from don't, that business, it's not around anymore. So you make the call of who you think the money should go to, which I would have not known necessarily what the right thing to do is. Then it says here also, these reparations take innumerable forms. There are some general principles which we find guiding, meaning to ask for direction and for guidance. So again, I have to do this with other people around me. I've developed a few good ideas over the course of a number of years of sobriety, but I'm still better off when I seek input in what I'm doing, whether it's making amends or whether it's just how to treat people tactfully at work when they're complete idiots. Which, at any rate, so before I go too far off the spiritual beam, as I can do even here in the middle of a meeting, I have that innate ability. Thanks for inviting me to be here. And because I would much rather be sitting at home watching Netflix or doing something under, a warm blanket, watching TV or something, coming out on a cold, rainy night. I'm not going to drink. So why am I here? Like, oh, to be of maximum service.
Amen. Amen.
So I need regular reminders of this. I'm glad to be here tonight. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
Good. Thank you both. All right, let's talk about this. We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. You can sign up for email on our website, simpleactive.net. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, local service district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help other alcoholics who still suffer. Our common welfare. A word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Hi, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Nope. All right. Thank you. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Point out the literature. It's over there to my left. You're right. If it folds, it's free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available here after the meeting closes. Please feel free to talk to me, or if you're shy, please send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recording and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us at the fellowship. The meeting after the meeting on Colonial Hot Avenue. Stella's, Cafe Stella's, thank you. Colonial Highway. I'm not from Norfolk, okay? Anyway, let's in closing, we thanks our panel again for coming. Thank you all participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to say thank you to our panel. Joe or somebody has agreed to read the last two paragraphs.
I'm Joe, an alcoholic.
Hey, Joe.
It's a vision from you from Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly ask him, and your great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
You have a nice way of closing. I think I pulled up. Let's have a moment of silence. Our Father,
Mother, Lord in heaven, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Stay, you know, back. Where you stand?